Now, another BloomerBoomer.com podcast. Your host, Andy Asher, living life over 55. Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
I have learned already in this office that the difficult decisions always come to this desk. I must admit that many of them do not look at all the same as the hypothetical questions that I have answered freely and perhaps too fast on previous occasions.
That was September 8, 1974, President Gerald Ford pardoning Richard Nixon of any wrongdoings in the Watergate scandal. The pardon actually came out less than a month after Nixon resigned the presidency. Just go back a few years. It was a defining moment for boomers. Former vice president and wife Tipper Gore, after 40 years of marriage, an example of the modern-day trend. Divorce. In a survey conducted by the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers during the past 5 years, 61% of divorce lawyers in the U.S. indicate an increase in the number of divorce cases among couples over 50 years old. I talked to Georgia chapter president, attorney Robert Boyd, about the increase in divorce among baby boomers.
I would tell you probably in the last 5 to 7 years, the majority of my practice is probably people over the age of 50 who get divorced. That's kind of a start on it. I mean, I see a lot of those kind of cases. Another trend that I've seen are for what I would call people on the younger side of the baby boom era, early-ish 50s, okay? The husband, if he's been the one who has earned, so to speak, what was accumulated during the marriage, meaning the primary working spouse, I see more of a trend that he is willing to kind of cut to the chase and say, look, I'm willing to give you 50%. Let's just don't argue about it, which is an interesting tactic to take because the fact is that when you have these cases of substantial wealth, for instance, a 50-50 outcome is not an absolute certainty. So I find that trend interesting of, financial transparency, let's just divide things equally and let's get on with our lives. Because these kind of cases, my experience is they tend to not get heavily litigated.
So how would you look at that? Is that a good thing?
Oh, I think it's a good thing. I mean, one of the things that I try, if I'm representing the man, a typical situation in one of these baby boomer cases is that one spouse will generally have most of the knowledge regarding the finances, and the other will not. It is not unusual for it to be the primary earner to have most of the knowledge about the finances. So it is a good thing when the person with knowledge wants there to be transparency. It takes a lot of stress out of the divorce process, and it allows the parties to kind of get to the bottom line more quickly. And importantly for them, it allows them to save money by not having a lot of aggressive, needless litigation.
Any sense as to why you're seeing this trend right now?
I would say the general attitude is among, and I don't want to be pigeonholing, but let me just, the men who come to me with, of this generation and want a divorce, typically their attitude is, I'm still young, I'm still healthy, I've got a lot of living to do, and it's time to get on with it. I've not been in a happy marriage for a variety of reasons, and it's not like I hate her. I'm prepared to be fair. I just want to move on. That is, I hear that time and again when these guys come in. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't mean maybe they're having an affair as well, but that's typically the prevailing attitude.
And then, of course, there's the other aspect that more than likely the two people are going to have to divide all their assets.
You know, obviously it's a little easier the more they've accumulated, right? And I think it's easier for folks in a position who have accumulated some wealth to more easily follow through on this desire to, quote, you know, live my life. I think it's in the cases where you have folks who have not been as fortunate that tend to perhaps stay longer in the marriage. Because it would not surprise me if we really dug down on these statistics that you would see that a lot of these baby boom divorces are people who have accumulated enough so that they'll still be okay and have a decent life after they divide it.
How is the general feeling, would you say, between the couple who are in the process of getting divorced? In other words, you mentioned that the man wants to get on with life. I wonder how the wife in this and feels about it.
Well, a lot of times, you know, you're going to get the full gamut. I mean, a case I just recently handled, you know, the wife acted very, and I say act, that's probably not a good word. She expressed surprise. You know, I didn't know it was so bad. And that may or may not be true. But you can find the full range from somebody who says, thank God, I'm glad you finally brought this up. I haven't been happy either. To a situation where somebody genuinely is taken off guard. And then that can tend to cause problems because it's not unusual for the person caught off guard to want to dig down and find out why. And it's also not uncommon to find other reasons.
Not that you necessarily spend a lot of time philosophizing, but maybe you do. But what kind of signal do you think that is in today's world?
Well, I do think about things like that. I don't know what that says, but, you know, I think the longer I do this business, the more I tend to think about it, and you cannot help yourself but cross over into the role of a counselor sometimes. I generally believe that people don't try hard enough to make their marriage work. And almost without exception, when somebody comes in to see me, I talk to them for a good amount of time about whether or not they've really tried to see if, you know, their marriage truly is, in the legal jargon, irretrievably broken. Or is it a situation where you haven't tried hard enough? Because I tell them, you know, the grass is more often than not really not greener on the other side.
Well, that sounds like some good advice. Now, one of the things that I noticed here in some of the reading I did prior to this is the observation that baby boomers may thrive a little bit more in change. They are maybe inclined more towards independence. So what are you seeing in that regard?
Well, I think that's true. I think that what I'm finding is the people who are going down this path, For the most part, have thought it out and have this picture of what life would look like for them as a single person on the other side. I had a guy come in the other day, very successful, you know, we talked, and he thought he had a clear vision about what life was going to be like. I mean, he even separated from his wife, and you know, had his own place and he was all set up, and then came to the conclusion that it wasn't all that great, that maybe he hadn't tried hard enough. Now, I think that's probably a rarity. I think most of these folks, when they do finally separate, they're not going back. And it's not uncommon that they've got somebody else they think that's going to be a better solution on the other side. That's true of women as well as men.
Yeah, I noticed in that same material that I was reading is that it looks as though women are initiating the divorce at a higher rate than what we've seen in the past as well.
You know, it's not uncommon for a woman to feel neglected in a marriage, to have had little intimacy in her marriage for a variety of reasons, and to want a better life for herself. You know, most men, it's kind of ironic, most men that come to see me, when you ask them, do you think your wife could be having an affair? No way. Well, try again. Because, you know, people look for happiness, and sometimes they make a bad choice and on the timing of when they start another relationship. But women, you know, I think women are wired similarly to the men in the baby boomer age, because I think that age of folks have tended to take better care of themselves. I think that they have a longer life expectancy, and a longer life expectancy of, you know, an enjoyable life. They're not ready to retire at 59 or 62. They think they've got a lot of time ahead of them, and they may be right.
I suppose when you went to law school and studied law, little did you think that you would be seeing such an insight into our humanity and society. It's kind of a different part of it, huh?
Well, I've got to tell you, as an aside, when I went to law school, I told my friends that if you ever hear of me doing family law, just come and shoot me, because it means I lost my mind. Fortunately, nobody's come to shoot me yet. But I will tell you, I think family law is probably one of the hardest areas to practice. It's definitely one of the most fascinating, because, I mean, you really get to know people.
Undoubtedly. Also, how much of a factor is the empty nest syndrome and the change that takes place when the children are out on their own and you're back to just dealing with who you were, 30 years ago when you first met?
Oh, I think that's tremendous. I think that is a tremendous factor. And, you know, it's just so common that the only glue that holds some couples together are the children. And when they're gone, that glue is gone, and they look at each other and realize they don't really know each other. And some people are able to fix that, and some people don't have the energy to fix that, and they think it'd just be easier to find somebody else or to try something different. That empty nest is a real crucible for a lot of marriages. That there is no question about that.
Any bit of advice that someone, you know, facing that, it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't really come suddenly. In other words, they know that the kids are going on their own. It's not as if you're blindsided by it. Anything to prepare and maybe try to salvage a marriage, whether it's on the rocks or not?
Well, that's where I say people have got to try harder. It's something you have to, there's no way to prepare for it perfectly. I can tell you that personally, because my wife and I have been married 25 years and we just became empty nesters. And there's no way to really prepare when those kids are gone, except to say we're going to do things differently. And, we went to a marriage counselor just to get some advice in those areas. And so, you know, we kind of have a plan now about what we're going to try to do. And, again, but that's you know, wanting to make something work. And some people just aren't willing to do the work on that.
And you touched upon a couple of things that go on there, and maybe I can just go back if there's anything more to be said about it, but
sure.
How much of a factor is it to have to do with finances? I guess there are always, you know, a lot of different factors that lead to divorce, but they say finances is a big one.
One of the major. No question about it. You know, that can be sometimes true with a woman who has stayed at home, who sacrificed, you know, maybe a career to raise children, and she's not been in a very fulfilling marriage. She knows that they do have enough where she could get out and have some money of her own and have a life, and that happens. But money is, make no mistake about it, money is a big factor leading to divorce. And a lot of marriages where there are problems over money, I would point to a lack of what the word I used earlier, transparency. That is, making sure both spouses understand what they have, what they spend, et cetera, as opposed to feeling controlled and not knowing and the unknown about the money.
And then again, I know you alluded to this. It's also possible that perhaps the man sees some younger opportunities out there, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I wouldn't limit it to the men. Women see other opportunities out there, too, where they haven't been fulfilled in their marriage, and they know that there's enough money to go around, and they can have a good life, too. But that's a very easy trap for somebody who's been in a marriage that's just been about work and children to fall into.
There must be some, from what your experience has been, perhaps there's a few things that you can share with people that they might consider before they come into your office or maybe come into your office. So what might you see or say in terms of what people do?
Well, I get a lot of people who come in, and I never see them again. And they come in once, and they want to know what's divorce look like from a legal standpoint, just because they want to have a basis of fact that they can use in their consideration. And folks that come in about that, I do not let them leave without giving them the name or names of one or two marriage counselors to talk to. I think that when you sense trouble, that's the time to try to nip it in the bud, so to speak. But if for some reason people, and I haven't quite figured this out, they're hesitant to get, some people are afraid of counseling and afraid of therapy. And if people are starting to creep down the path of divorce, they are not going to figure it out on their own. It will not happen. Self-help, almost without exception, fails when a marriage is in trouble.
Yeah.
So the best thing I can say to people is if you sense something is wrong, find a good marriage counselor as soon as you can and do whatever it takes to get your spouse to go with you.
You probably see a few examples of a smooth divorce, but I would think that would be the exception than the rule.
You know, the fact is, I've been fortunate in my practice to represent some folks who have accumulated some wealth, and those folks, they tend to, there are always exceptions to this, but I find that I can talk to folks like that more easily about, let's try to be civil in this so that at the end of the day, you're not ashamed of how you conducted your divorce case. And I think that resonates with folks, because it doesn't have to be a fistfight. What it does need to be, if you want it to be smooth, is that you have to get both parties to buy into the idea that there is a fair way to do this. Now, I will tell you, the cases where you have problems, where it doesn't go smoothly, is where there's not enough money for two households. Those are the cases where you have, you know, malice and aggression in the case, because people feel like they have to fight for everything. Because they know, while they may have enough money to have a nice lifestyle when they're all under one roof, that it's going to change dramatically when the money has to go to two separate households. That's what really creates the stress and the adversarial nature of the action.
Children of that marriage would just as soon see a happy result of all that. Do you ever get a chance to get a sense of that?
You know, sometimes that's true. I've also heard older teenage children say it's about time, that this needed to happen sooner.
Yeah, in other words, they had expected it, and maybe the parents didn't want to...
The parents hadn't done a very good job of hiding their animosity, and it really, sure, you'll see some situations where the children really are just crushed by it because the parents had done a good job of hiding it, right? And then the children are caught totally by surprise, but other times you'll see these children say, thank God, I just want both of you to be happy, and obviously you're not happy together.
Well, as we wind down here, any bits of advice so over the years that you've been doing this?
Yes. Make sure that each spouse has equal knowledge about the family's money. That is critical. Secondly, don't use money as a way to have leverage over the other spouse. Those two things cause more problems in relationships than you can imagine.
Yeah. How long have you been doing all this, Bob?
I started practicing law in 1983. Been doing nothing but divorce work since 1988.
And you've been seeing a more frequent incidence of divorce among baby boomers.
We have. But as I said, that age group has always been a large part of the folks I represent, because they comprise the folks who are empty nesters or whose kids are kind of in high school, that age where they've kind of done a lot of the heavy child rearing lifting, so to speak, and it hasn't been fulfilling for one reason or another. But I mean, I've always had that, but I will tell you that I think baby boomers are making the decision more quickly now than they used to get out, and are not staying in as long.
Any sense as to, baby boomers are beginning, just now really beginning to hit the level of retirement, and any sense as to where this is all going to go?
Well, what I've been seeing is, particularly with some of the guys, they will, pick up with another relationship. And it's not unusual for them to pick up with another relationship with a younger person and to start a new family. And that creates a whole new dynamic of an older father with younger children, and then how they interface with their older children, I think that's going to be a real challenge in the years to come. I also think that this trend's going to continue, that you're going to see these folks who've worked hard all their lives, and they have now in a position where they can retire and have some kind of a decent life. I think you're going to see these people think that being single doesn't look so bad, and having one less area of responsibility seems pretty attractive to them. So I think this trend is going to continue. You know, I'm representing a guy right now who is, I think he's 59 or 60, and he's got like a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Well, Bob, finally, it seems as though your job affords you a unique perspective, sort of a 10,000-foot view of marriage in our society. What might be your final thoughts?
I guess I would just say to them, particularly the baby boomers, you got a lot of years invested in this. And before you pull the plug, just make sure you've tried.
And for people who are in the stage where they're considering this or wanting to take some action, maybe tell them about yourself or what advice you might have or where they go from here.
Well, I think if they're contemplating this, I would suggest that they contact a good divorce lawyer, not necessarily somebody their neighbor used or whatever, and go get some good advice and make sure they understand what this looks like. And make sure they have an understanding what the finances are probably going to look like going forward. Because not one side ends up with everything. It just doesn't happen. And there's a high probability that their life is going to change, and they need to have a clear understanding of what that's going to look like. And a good divorce lawyer can help them at least have some understanding of that picture.
So does that mean two lawyers for each side or one to represent everybody?
Well, you're not, ethically, we're not allowed to represent both parties in a divorce. We can only represent one person. So I just make it a practice. I don't meet with a couple. I just don't do that.
Well, Bob, it's really been interesting. Any last or final thoughts?
No, I think we covered it pretty well. To summarize, make sure you've tried hard enough, meaning, you know, give counseling a chance. And one of the most important preventative things you can do is make sure you have total financial transparency with your spouse.
Bob, thank you so much for your time.
Well, and thank you.
Thank you for listening to this BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts. You can click on the transcript section of the website. You can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Finally, we would love it if you could leave a comment, good, bad, or indifferent, in the reply section of the podcast. Thanks again.